This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just say it.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
And we try to bring different people in each week, just for the sake of giving different people a different kind of roundtable discussion torture, because this was the big thing when we started doing it. What are we talking about? Some people really care and still try to get it out of the host.
Oh, really?
My co-host, Ramya Muthan, is here with us today. And when we do this open conversation on a variety of subjects handpicked by yours truly, we welcome in our today's guest, Alex Smythe, TV reporter for AMI TV. Thanks, pal. Appreciate you coming back and joining us.
Hey, it's always fun to do these and chat with you guys.
Well, let's kick it off with a little McDonald's talk, if we will. It will be mandatory for all workers at McDonald's to take training to prevent harassment, discrimination, and violence in the workplace.
CEO Chris Kempczinski told the AP McDonald's needs to set expectations and then continually refer to them.
Provide both current employees as well as prospective employees the confidence that when they walk into a McDonald's restaurant, they know that they're going to be protected.
2 million workers at McDonald's will get the training. At least 50 workers filed charges against the company over the last 5 years, alleging physical and verbal harassment, and in some cases, retaliation.
A few bad incidents or a few bad issues can set back the work, all the good work that everybody else is doing.
The problem isn't just in the restaurants. McDonald's fired its former CEO, Steve Easterbrook, in 2019 after he admitted having a relationship with an employee. I'm Ed Donahue.
So much more, Ramya, has to be quite a bit more than just talk or for show. And we all know people who work at these mega food corporations like McDonald's. Your feelings about when you hear something like this and belief, especially as a disabled person, we start thinking, and a lot of time women are put in that category of, oh yeah, there's some noise about it. We better roll out something. Where's the heart behind it?
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was going to say in terms of where's the heart behind it. Like, all of this sounds like protocol, which first of all feels like a lot too late, and not to say that it can't still be implemented, but it feels like it's years. I mean, the numbers that he was tossing out there right now about how many incidents there has been and how many people have retaliated because of it, I don't know, man. It always throws me back to another name we're very familiar with, Facebook. You know, the kind of accountability or lack thereof from big organizations and entities like this who are international and who have so much influence on everybody. It just seems like, shouldn't there be some accountability? And yeah, we're talking about all kinds of vulnerable sectors, women, people with disabilities, employees. But just in general, it's just bad rep. And it's just bad leadership, I find.
You hope that it's not the millions of people that McDonald's has working for them, the fact that so many people in the world, one way or another, are connected, which makes McDonald's, one way or another, connected to all of us hearing this. You wonder, how can you actually roll this out? And obviously, if you want to, you're a company like McDonald's, you certainly can make sure that the word of millions of our staff are going to get this training, you know, regardless of what we say. Well, people should know, and sure, we should know how to treat people, but we also at least look for people just to treat people the way they're told to treat people in the workplace. And if that's the only thing keeping them from being inappropriate, you know, at least it's something. Alex, with the last few years, we see so much go on with social media, and these things are much more visible. Is it that's driving this kind of thing? Or do you think there's more due to it because of the pandemic? And I mean, that could even mean people having, since we're not having people coming in to the McDonald's restaurants in a lot of places throughout the world, maybe it's that drive-through, maybe it's that crew that's in there. What do you think is driving this, the outcries on social media or maybe the pandemic?
You know, I think there's probably a bit of both that's contributing to it. I don't think it's one key incidence or one key factor that's really kind of pushing this new mandate, this agenda that's, you know, as Ramya said, it's a bit too late to really be seen as being taken kind of with all the heart and sincerity that it should. I mean, it's part of, hey, you're trying to address an issue in some way. Great. You know, that's positive. It's how you're going about doing it and what the impact really going to be. I mean, there should be obviously more steps taken. And when you're talking about an organization or a company like McDonald's, I mean, the amount of money and power and influence that they're able to utilize and really mm-hmm. establish within that brand and that company globally, even when you look, it's like the uniformity that they can have from country to country and basically still have their product and have their, I guess, culture
yeah.
within each one of their restaurants yeah. around the world. They can do a lot more and they can make a lot more effective changes and implement it. They've shown when it's important to them, they can do it. So I really don't know where it's coming from directly, because I don't think there is that one kind of factor that's really contributing to this. I think it's an overall kind of influence of everything, but I feel more can definitely be done, and they've proven it in the past that they can do better at implementing things like this. So why not do more?
Interesting to watch it. Interesting to speak to the people that each of us individually knows that are going to be going through this. And, you know, that's not enough for us just to say, well, people should know better. Why do we even have to be going through this training? We all know right and wrong, and obviously not. Or even if we do, some of us just feel that they're above what is right and what is wrong and do what they want. I want to move on to something, Alex. I know you spend a lot of time as you came to Toronto from the West. John Furlong is pitching a broader Winter Games vision on Friday to Vancouver's Board of Trade. Now, the head of the organizing committee for the 2010 Olympics and Paralympics in Vancouver, and of course, includes Whistler, says more areas of the province could benefit of a 2030 Games if they were brought there.
The idea is to let the whole province become members of one team, to let communities be all on the same team, all pulling in the same direction, and feel like that they are part of something grand, as opposed to being spectators of something grand that's happening 500 miles south of them.
Furlong says that the venues and expertise remaining from the 2010 Games would be really wonderful, would also keep expenses down when it came to hosting a 2030s Olympics and Paralympics. Now, Alex, do you think for people out there, this would be a good thing if they actually go through the motions, get the Games? Where do you think people would stand at this point? Economically, it looks like a good choice.
Yeah, it's interesting, because whenever you kind of look into trying to bid on getting Olympics, Paralympics, you know, there's always this split kind of view from the public. Some are all for it because it's a great way to establish this kind of national presence on a global stage. You can rally behind the pride of the country. And then others say, you know, it doesn't really lead to much. We build up a bunch of stadiums and they kind of go to waste after these large events are done. I think with Canada, and especially out west in BC, we, for the most part, as I say, we already have those venues. We yeah. use those venues in other situations and we utilize them well. I think that having done a lot of work and looking into how the Olympics and Paralympics have run, I think, you know, it's always a positive. We're Canada has been, over the past few years, really been pushing to get more high-profile events and sports tournaments to come to Canada to help show off the country. I mean, we're part of that 2026 World Cup bid, and we've had a few other major events over the past few years. So I think it's a good thing, and I'm sure there's still a majority of people who would agree, but there's always going to be those who say, ah, I don't want it, you know, it gets too crowded, and it floods our local areas, but it also helps develop the areas, you know, infrastructure gets put in place, funding for big projects that may not otherwise get the attention and funding they need get built and done in anticipation of the mass crowds that do come.
Well, it almost makes you think it would be as exciting as it is to find to watch Olympics of any kind in different venues, it almost makes sense to say, hey, yeah, we still have facilities, and 20 years later, they're still going to be just as usable to do this. Maybe we need to look at that as a cycle that Olympics and Paralympics use, you know, hit 2010 at a place and you're back there in 2024 or something like that to kind of utilize those spaces and that cost, as well as help put that injection of money and tourism back into that area. Maybe that is a way to go, even though I know a lot of us are back there again.
But that's one of the biggest things that people talk about, though. Sorry to jump in, but, you know, with that, so much money is being thrown into these cities, these spots for Olympics, Paralympics, other big games like this. But where do you find the budget, number one? And when you do, it's for that year and then nothing. But it's not really nothing, not even if it's only that one time in a person's lifetime that the Olympics get to be in that area. It's still not nothing, because like you guys are saying, with the infrastructures, with accessibility, with paying attention to those spots that need some prioritizing, I think it's still beneficial.
I think so too. And I think cycling around, as much as it's a cost thing, if there's a way to kind of make some of that money back, or if a community can have some kind of way of rebounding on a second go, once everything's paid for, the taxes have got it, now you're looking at, I don't want to say profit, but that cap that helps out. Alex, I want to talk to you also about the Vancouver Canucks, hockey fan that you are. What should be going on now? You've got players, a team that's got to roll back out on the ice after many of them had COVID. Their families have been dealing with this. Is this a team that we should find another way to and end their season? Should we allow? Is there other, you know, we don't even have as many people in the minors to call up and make the team that just to finish out. And we have the cry of other teams that if you take them away, even if you were to issue them winning points and say, okay, let's just assume every team that plays them from now to the end of the season wins their games, give them those points, because not everybody will play them an equal amount of times or has left on their schedule to do so. As a fan, what do you think?
You know, it's such a challenge because for the most part, I feel like the Canucks have kind of gone through a situation that I think a lot of people, myself included, expected to be more prevalent when sports came back to play earlier. Like, I expected this to be more commonplace when the baseball came back, when football came back. And we did see instances where some teams were heavily impacted and they had to really revamp the schedule. But we didn't see anything to this extent where almost every single person on that team contracted the virus. So as you say, there is that option. Well, do you just award the points? Well, this year is already going to be such a weird year. And, you know, as many people in the sports will talk about, oh, well, whoever wins or however the games and the seasons turn out, there's always this asterisk of COVID pandemic year that's beside the year. I mean, it's going to be the case because of the divisions are different. And, you know, Canada teams are only playing in Canada. So the rankings are going to be different as if it was a normal season. So, I mean, if it's one of those things, if they can't field a team, then you have to have those serious discussions that, you know, you can't just constantly bring try to call up players, because the clearly this was a team issue. This is how it was being run, that they couldn't control the outbreak once it got into the facility because of, you know, how it spreads and how close contact and close quarters everyone is in a team sport like hockey are. That's normally. I think, you know, you make a tough call, like awarding the points and shutting down, because at a certain point it becomes more of a health issue. That what if one of the players who is on that team, what if they die because of COVID, or their life is altered because of COVID? You know, where does the responsibility lie at that point? Is it on the player? Is it on the team? Is it on the league for allowing them to continue to try to play and stay in those close quarters?
And you just really worry at the push. I understand the dollars. I understand the commitments to TV and so on to do this. But as you say, someone could die from this. Someone could have long haul issues that could play out, or even sooner have an issue from it. And we all say, is it worth it? And I know some people say, well, they make enough money. You know, that's money you can't buy life, right? You can't replace it. So interesting to see how this falls out. I think we're going to see some really scary stuff go on as they try to navigate through this. The Liberal government, guys, is proposing legislation that recognizes everyone in Canada has a right to a healthy environment. Environment and Climate Change Minister Jonathan Wilkins says the change is part of a package of changes and amendments to the Canadian Environmental Protection Act. Take a listen.
This is not symbolism. The legal right to a healthy environment will lead to stronger protections in tandem with the evolving science, especially for groups of people vulnerable to high levels of pollution who live downwind or downstream. This includes Canadians who may be at greater risk of exposure or more susceptible to the effects of chemicals.
Wilkins says the amendments also focus on how the country manages chemicals, so that's important. Ramya, we have talked about giving status to something that is like a river, but right now I'm kind of wondering, very briefly, if you could toss to me things like breathing issues and stuff like that, making this kind of thing more usable for us as citizens and thinking ahead and what we can use against companies that are our polluters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Obviously, there are some serious things that we need to consider when it comes to how we're handling climate and just forestry, any kind of environmental thing that we're bringing up these days, because we're getting stats that we haven't focused on before. We're getting the kinds of feedback that we haven't focused on before just because, you know, nobody had time for it, seriously. And now we're hearing about it, which means we have to start thinking of what this means long term, because there's a lot of different issues.
Alex, we hear of people who have breathing issues and people not taking it much to a right, whether it's pollution from cars going by their homes. Briefly, any thoughts on this?
You know, I think that, as Remy said, we're hearing more about this now and it's becoming a bigger issue. I think, if anything, you know, you look at how the world dealt with COVID and the vaccine development, that within a year, we have a viable vaccine. So just innovation, effort, and work really can come together if you are focused and if it's at the priority at the standpoint. So I think that if you take a strong stance on environmentalism, if you really crack down on polluters and what is really the root cause, you can see great change at a very quick timetable.
I agree. Alex Smythe, TV reporter for AMI Toronto, joining us. Thanks a lot, pal. Appreciate it. We are going to take a break. That's the Thursday Roundtable. We'll do it again next week on the program. So thank you for joining us for it. Ramya will, of course, bait me for a slip question that we're going to be talking about next week. That won't happen, right? And we thank Alex again for being with us, folks. We'll take a break and tell you what's coming up tomorrow after this.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.